Passage I'll be reading this morning is from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 14, beginning with verse 25. Pardon me. My asthma is not happy this morning, so I apologize if I have to do some throat clearing and coughing. Can't control those spasms always. The first 24 verses of this chapter have occurred in the setting of a banquet. Of a notable Pharisee invited Jesus and a lot of other people to come to his home for a banquet. Jesus took advantage of the occasion and teaches some really important lessons. As we begin verse 25, it would seem that Jesus has left the banquet and he's either outside where a group of people gather, or perhaps he's walking and people notice who he is and build a large and growing numbers to follow him and hear what he says. So I begin reading with verse 25 to the end of the chapter. And there went great multitudes with him, and he turned and said unto them, If a man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it? Lest haply, after he hath laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, This man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king, going to make war against another king, sitteth not down first and consulteth whether he be able with 10,000 to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is yet a great way off, he sendeth an ambassadors, and desireth conditions of peace. So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple. Salt is good, but if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it be seasoned? It is neither fit for the land, nor yet for the dunghill, but men cast it out. He that hath ears to hear, let him hear. Jesus uses two very simple natural comparisons to teach us some reality that is not commonly accepted today about biblical discipleship. A builder will start probably designing a building that he wants. He'll design it for the purpose he intends to build. But he also, being the builder, will begin to put the nickels and dimes together. Do I have enough money to build this building? It's easy to design a building that's more grandiose than your pocketbook. And so Jesus says, if you're a builder, you want to think about what you're building, but do you have the money to pay for it? If you're a king, you're going to face bigger kingdoms and stronger kings. You have 10,000 soldiers. Are you going to go out and declare war against a neighboring king with 20,000 soldiers? Or are you going to try to create a peaceful relationship so you don't have to fight them? So what does this have to do with what Jesus teaches? And for that matter, what does salt have to do with the same thing? And I pose for you and me a question. What is the price of true discipleship? How much time, heart, soul, mind, and body have I given to considering the price I am willing to pay? Discipleship itself is not a once and done thing. The word disciple throughout the New Testament is translated from a word which means a student or someone who's learning in a teaching situation. Jesus is in effect saying, if you want to be my disciple, then you say, you're my teacher. And you go to school where I'm doing the teaching, and you listen to what I'm teaching you. The experience is deeply embedded in my mind. In my second year of college, I was taking a class in physics. The professor who taught that class was one of the best professors in my college career. He knew his subject, and he knew how to teach it and make it interesting. There was a young student, also a second year student, who apparently had from childhood a very strong penchant, a strong inclination for electronics and physics and those kinds of things, so much so that in elementary school, his parents bought him, I don't remember the name, but there were kits that you could buy and you put together radios or televisions or things like that, very complicated things. In elementary school, his parents bought him a kit to build a TV, and he built it, and it worked. Well, on this particular day, the professor's teaching about some of the physical laws of electricity, and this young man decides he knows more than the teacher and tried to take over the class. The professor, and very effective, but very kindly, just walked that young man through the limit of his knowledge so that the young man realized the teacher knew more than he did. And I had to admire the way the professor did it without really making the young man feel too embarrassed. What embarrassment he felt he did to himself, you know. I think one of the big issues Jesus raises right at the very beginning of this lesson, I mean, the first point out of his mouth is, if you want to come after me, you must hate your family, your relationships, blah, blah, blah. And you must take up your cross. What does it mean? Obviously, Jesus is not using the word hate in the street idea that we use the word hate. The Old Testament, and Jesus affirms it strongly in the New Testament, says you're to honor your father and your mother. How can you, as we think of the word hate, hate your parents and still fulfill that commandment? You can't. It's contradictory. In Leviticus and other places, in Deuteronomy, I'm thinking, there's a reminder that we are to in no way hate our neighbor. We are to love our neighbor as ourself, and Jesus emphatically teaches that in his own teachings. So how can you love your neighbor as yourself and hate your neighbor? We have to think about what this word means. The generic version of teaching says it just means to love less. There may be an element of reality there, but I want to pose a question for all of us. How much less must you love someone until it's called hate? You know, let's be honest with ourselves. This is a serious subject. I want to give you a parallel passage from the book of Matthew. Chapter 10. Verse 37. It's very much a parallel to the passage I read. And Jesus says in this lesson, he that loveth father or mother more than me, there's a degree, is not worthy of me. And he that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he that taketh not his cross and followeth me is not worthy of me. So there Jesus kind of reverses the situation. And you love someone else more than me, Jesus says. Well, Jesus is God in human flesh. Everything in Scripture, Genesis to Revelation, says God should be our supreme love. We should love no one and nothing more than we love God. Can we all start on that foundation? I think we can. And there's another little comparison I want us to look at. In chapter 16 of Luke, verse 13, this is the conclusion of a lesson, but I want to get to this point for time. No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. Ye cannot serve God and mammon. Most of us have a career of employment. We've gone from employer A to employer B. You want to leave employer A on good terms because you need a recommendation of your employment record with them. Are you going to walk into human resources the last day on the job and say, I despise you. I despise this company. I hate you. Bye. That's not going to work too well, is it? But so what's Jesus saying? I think he makes the point. There is a sense of loyalty that goes with what he's teaching. Where is your greatest loyalty? You are loyal to employer A when you work for employer A. You put your heart and soul in working and doing a good job for employer A. Circumstances change. Perhaps a greater opportunity comes along for employer B, and you change jobs, and you go to employer B. You're going to give the same loyalty to employer B that you gave to employer A, and you're no longer going to give that loyalty to employer A. That's what Jesus is teaching here. Brother Matt, you left a good teaching job in Central California. Did you hate those people in terms of our natural way of thinking? No, of course not. But today, where is your employment loyalty? To the school district up there in Central California or to the one in Orange County? Jesus is telling us something here. We take our job seriously. We work 40 hours or more a week at our job. How much time do we work at being a disciple of Jesus? How much time do we spend not just reading, but studying our Bibles? There was a period of time when several of you, I give you a printout that if you follow the schedule, you would read the Bible through in 1 year. That's a wonderful exercise, but it's the first step in the school of Scripture. Reading is not studying. You can read it and read it and read it and read it and still know nothing unless you study. What does this mean? How does it apply? What did Jesus mean when he said you need to hate father, mother, brother, sister for his sake in the kingdom? Loyalty, priority is what I believe he's teaching here. Very much, the person we choose as our teacher will influence how we view life. If we are a disciple of Jesus, that means we go to him, we find out what he teaches us to do, to live, to think, to believe, and we work at doing it. If I ask for a show of hands, how many of you perfectly practiced the Sermon on the Mount today? Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7. And I'd be the first one for my hands to go down behind my back. But we're working at, that's what a student is. A student hasn't learned it all. Inside academia, there's this little, it's kind of a cruel tease in a way. You go through in high school and in undergrad in college 4 years. The first year, you are a freshman. You're fresh. You're new. You're unlearned. Then you're a sophomore. Did you realize that the word sophomore in English is a translation of two Greek words? You want the literal translation of sophomore? A sophisticated moron. You think you know in the second year, but you don't. And then you're a junior. Junior after 3 years? And finally, in year four, you become a senior. Where are we in that four-year, four-term category in our discipleship? Am I a freshman after 70 years? I should be more like a senior, shouldn't I? I was telling my daughter and her family on the way in about a cute story I heard many years ago. A general contractor needs a skilled carpenter to work on his job. He interviews people, and one man shows up, and he has a good resume, and he says, "I have 20 years of experience as a carpenter." "Wow, that's impressive. I'll hire you." "You're hired." 1 month later, the contractor calls the man into his office and gives him his final check and says, "You're fired." And he said, "When you interviewed with me, you said you had 20 years of experience as a carpenter. I've observed your work for the last month, and I have concluded that you have 1 year of experience repeated 20 times. You're still a one-year carpenter." Does that maybe hit close to home for some of us? I want to take this student point one step further. You learn from Jesus, but Jesus teaches about life and how you live life and deal with everything life throws at you. The good, the bad, the ugly, the happy, the memorable, the painful. How do I deal with those difficult, trying moments? How well I have learned the lesson, how well I look to my teacher as my example will affect how I look at those life's painful moments. And for that matter, the happy moments. Life can turn you bitter. Oh, it can do so very easily. But if we're looking at Jesus as our teacher, we will avoid that and look at his example and honor him by living like him. In the third chapter of Philippians, I won't turn there, I have just a moment. Paul talks about how much, verses 7 to 11, how much, and he was not generic. "Oh, preacher, I've given up so much for my discipleship." "Well, why don't you tell me how much? Be specific, don't be generic." Paul names specifically the things he has given up for his faith, for Jesus. And it reminds me, Joe, how much have you given up for Jesus? How much has Cody or Keith or Terry or any of you, how much have you truly given up for Jesus? And here's the punchline. You can't get to the peace and joy and contentment of Philippians chapter 4 without walking barefoot through Philippians chapter 3. Let's hold each other by the hand and walk barefoot through the chapter. God bless. Brother Matt.